Title of the message this evening is Calming the Storms of Life. One of the, most surreal experiences that I had thinking about this story happened in 2015. I'm glad that it was not the way that it was in our text tonight, but it was enough so that you could almost see it if you closed your eyes and just thought about it. You could almost visualize what was happening here. Because you see, the Sea of Galilee has storms that come up violently. I was sitting in the office today. I didn't go home today. I was just studying and trying to get ready for tonight. And I was sitting there, and I guess it was probably about 6 o'clock. All of a sudden, you could hear it, and the rains were coming hard, and the thundering. And just a few minutes before, everything was calm. And so in 2015, I was on a boat with a group of people. And as we're there, all of a sudden, it began to get dark. And then the wind began to pick up a little bit, and it was kind of quiet. Everybody kind of got quiet. And the boat captain, who was a Christian man, he was a Messianic Jew, he was playing music, and nobody was talking. Everybody was just kind of listening to the song. And so I grabbed my phone right quick, and I put it on video, and I just began to kind of go around a little bit so that you could see the water and you could see the people and you could see the sky. And it lasts maybe about a minute and a half. And I thought I would show that to you tonight. And so are we ready back there with that, Trace? Okay. All right, we'll kill the light so that you can see it a little bit better. And I want you to listen to the thunder and all in the back and the wind in the background. That was one of the most memorable experiences that I ever had. When that darkness kind of came up a little bit and that wind started blowing, I didn't add it to this clip, but there's a little clip where on that boat there's an American flag and an Israeli flag flapping in the wind, and that was pretty neat. I've heard stories of waves as much as 10 feet high on the Sea of Galilee. A lot of what Jesus did happened around that Sea of Galilee. Well, let's look at our story tonight. I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 8 to begin with. Matthew chapter 8, look with me at verse 23. And when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him or went with him. Now remember, everywhere that the Lord went, they were following him. Anytime after Luke 5, in the Gospel of Luke, which is where we're going to land, we're going to see that they were following him. They were listening to him preach. They were listening to him teach. They were watching him perform miracles. And so they followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves. That's important. And he was asleep. Now you say, why in the world would the Lord be asleep in something like this? Because he was tired. You say, well, what was he doing to be tired? Well, if you read back in a chronological way, you'll find he has just got finished teaching on certain parables. And I don't know if you realize this or not, but sometimes when you preach and teach, it can be exhausting. I was telling Brother Don, he and I were talking about a month ago, and he said, well, did you have a good Sunday? I said, well, to be honest with you, Brother Don, after Sunday night, I was spent. And what I did was I went to Dunkin' Donuts all by myself. I got a donut, and I got a cup of coffee, and I just sat there for about 30 minutes. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I was just tired. He said, I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, Jesus has been preaching and teaching, and now he tells them, he said, we need to go to the other side. And so he's in the boat, and all of a sudden, you know, he's asleep. And so the disciples came to him whenever the ship was covered with waves and awoke him. Lord, save us. We perish or we're going to die. And he said unto them, why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? All right, turn to the Gospel of Mark. Go to the Gospel of Mark. Look with me at chapter 4, verse 35. And the same day, what's the same day? Well, he's just got finished talking about the kingdom of heaven and kingdom of God, talking about the grain of mustard seed. So he's talking about how that, you know, you just need to hear, and you need to realize that the judgment that you mete out, it's going to be judged out to you or met out to you. And so he comes to verse 35, and he says, and the same day when it was even, in other words, it was beginning to get dark, he saith unto them, let us pass over unto the other side. Now, where are they at? They're basically in Capernaum. And now he's saying, we need to go to the other side, which is about 5 miles away, across the water. And when they had sent the multitude away, they took him even as he was in the ship. And there were also with him other little ships or little boats. So in other words, everybody may not have been in the one boat. There were some others maybe that would carry some folks to the other side. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship, so that it was now full. In other words, the water was coming over the side. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not big on boats that have water coming over the side. I remember one time when I was a teenager, my grandparents used to keep a little John boat in one of the ponds down at their farm. And not really paying much attention, I jumped into one of those things, grabbed a paddle, and I'm fixing to paddle around the shore and go fishing. And I get out there, and the next thing I know, I feel my tennis shoes getting wet. And I look down, and here I'm out in the middle of that little pond, and somebody's taking the plug out of this thing. And I got water coming in, and I'm thinking, where's the plug? Where's the plug? I can't find the plug. And so I threw that fishing rod down, and I'm paddling as fast as I can trying to get back to the shore so that I hadn't got to swim. Well, here they are. They're on the Sea of Galilee, and the waves are coming over the side, and they're bailing as fast as they can, but they're losing the battle. And all of this time, Jesus is asleep. Where's he asleep at? Well, in verse 38, he was in the hinder part, or the stern, of the ship, asleep on a pillow. They awake him and said unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? He arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said one to another, What manner of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Flip to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 8. Look with me at verse 22, and this is where we'll put in tonight. Now it came to pass on a certain day that he went into a ship with his disciples, said unto them, Let us go over unto the other side of the lake. Now the reason that they are going to the other side of the lake is what I'm going to be preaching on probably in about 2 weeks. There's a man over there that's demon-possessed. Actually, there's two guys that are demon-possessed. But he doesn't tell them that. Only thing they know is that their rabbi has said, Hey, let's go to the other side. Okay, we're your followers. We're going to do what you say. And so they see him asleep. And there came down a storm of wind on the lake. And the boat, was filled with water, and they were in jeopardy, danger. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, Master, we perish. Then he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water. And they ceased, and there was a calm. And he said unto them, Where is your faith? And they, being afraid, wondered, saying to one another, What manner of man is this? For he commandeth even the winds and the water, and they obey him. Let me give you three quick thoughts tonight. First of all, storms always come to disciples. They always come to disciples. And may I say that they come to those that are obedient as well as those that are disobedient. Storms always come. I've known of people, and they would say things like this. They would say, Well, boy, that guy's got trouble. It must be the chastisement of God. Well, it could be, but it also could not be. It may be just the testing. I had somebody tell me about 2 weeks ago, they said, You know who one of my favorite characters is? Matter of fact, it was one of the little girls in our church. She had gotten sick. She had to go home from camp. I was going to go back down last Thursday. And she's like, Can I go back to camp? So I took this kid back to camp, and as we're talking, I didn't have to do much talking. She talked all the way. And she was telling me, she said, you know what one of my favorite characters in the Bible is? And I'm thinking, Esther, you know, Ruth, somebody like that. She goes, Job. Thinking, that's pretty deep for a kid, you know. And she said, do you know about Job? And I said, well, a little bit. And we began to talk a little bit about Job. And one of the things that we landed upon was the fact that his friends thought that he wasn't right with the Lord. His wife was not supportive. The devil was accusing him, but he was vindicated in the end because he was right with God, and God had just allowed the testing. But sometimes people think, well, only the disobedient go through trials. May I say that nobody is immune? Nobody's immune from a storm. You have people that get cancer that are good people. You have people that love the Lord that have family problems. You've got people that have walked with God for decades and they may end up with a dementia or an Alzheimer's. Storms come to everybody. And nobody's immune from it. Not only that, but I don't think that Christians are exempt from any hostilities. You know, one of the things that we see in our country today is a lack of civility. There's a lot of hatred and a lot of anger. And much of that hatred and that anger is directed at God's people. We're accused of being judgmental. We're accused of being unloving. We're accused of being hypocritical. We're accused of basically killing people. There's all kinds of accusations that are thrown about concerning God's people. And, you know, we don't have this kind of hostility in our country, but in certain countries, people die because of their faith. They literally die because they name the name of Christ. And so you've got people that are hostile toward us. We have people that are buffeted by the devil. Have you ever been sitting in church and all of a sudden you have a thought go through your mind and you think, wow, how can I be sitting in God's house and have such a wicked thought? If you've been a Christian for any length of time, you've had something happen like that. I really believe that it's one of those fiery darts of the wicked one that is thrown at us. And there are times when we are buffeted of Satan, whether it be through a temptation, whether it be where he motivates somebody to come against us. But none of us are immune from that kind of stuff. Now, I want you to think with me a moment about the history of these disciples. You know, over the past several weeks, we've been talking about the various miracles. Some of the miracles that Jesus did was before he chose disciples. You know, he didn't really have any disciples when he turned the water into wine. He didn't have any disciples at that point. And so just for my own edification today, what I did was I was flipping back through the Gospel of Luke. And you know, it was chapter 5 when he was choosing the disciples. He went down to the Sea of Galilee and said, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. And so they began to follow him. Well, when you look at the things that happened over the past few weeks that I've preached on, there's five or six things that happened. First of all, there was a big drought of fish. I mean, they had their nets that had been empty all night, and then he says, cast out into the deep. And the next thing you know, they've got all of these fish, and they're thinking, who is this? Then you've got the situation where that there was a guy that had leprosy. And Jesus makes him whole, and they go, wow. Then you've got a servant of a centurion that got paralyzed somehow, and Jesus heals him 20 miles away. Then you've got Jesus sitting probably in Peter's house. The crowd is huge. People are outside. And four guys say, hey, we got a buddy. They go up the stairs or a ladder on the outside of Peter's house. They begin to break the tiles up, and they let this fella down that's a paraplegic. And Jesus says, take up your mat, take up your bed, and go home. He heals him. And they're seeing this. Not only that, it's the Sabbath day. And Jesus says to a man that's got a withered hand, stick out your hand. And he heals on the Sabbath day. And it causes him great problems with the religious crowd. But he heals a man with a withered hand. The disciples see that. And then also, he said, let's go through the little town of Nain. And I preached on that last week. And there was a boy that had died. He meets the funeral, stops the funeral, puts his hand over on the briar, the coffin, and raises the boy from the dead. The disciples see that. But now, they're in a boat. After seeing those five or six things that they have witnessed since he calls them, now they're in a boat. They're going 5 miles across. It's calm when they leave, but now water's coming over the side. The winds are blowing. They're bailing as fast as they can, but they're losing the battle. Their lives are at stake. There's not a single one of the miracles that has taken place until the one that we're talking about tonight where their lives were ever in danger. They were wowed. Oh, that'd be a pretty big deal if you're a professional fisherman, you know, and you're not catching anything, and all of a sudden some guy you don't know says, well, cast out in the deep, put your net over here, and the next thing you know, you got a bunch of fish. They're thinking, he's different. But your life's not in danger. Not only that, these men were professional fishermen. So that drought of fish, that would have been a pretty big deal to those guys. I mean, they were probably able to sell those things off and make a pretty good penny. And so, you've got these men, their lives were never threatened until this episode in their lives. We don't have that threat, but we could at some point. But if it comes, it's because the Lord is letting us go through it. And we need to always remember that. So storms come to everybody. Second thing I want you to see is this. Storms reveal who we are. Look with me at verse 24. They came to him and awoke him. Master, master. I mean, they're anxious about this. And what do they say? We perish. In other words, they're concerned about themselves. When storms come to us, are we not the same way? I mean, whenever I have trouble come, the first thing I'm thinking is, now how can I plan my way out of this? When I have problems that crop up, now how am I going to deal with this? Let me get me a rational plan going here. Well, these guys, no doubt, had some issues before. But evidently, there's something supernatural about this storm because these guys are scared to death. I mean, the wind's blowing, the waves are coming over. I heard one preacher say one time when he was in Israel, the waves got to be about 12 feet high and they wouldn't even go out on the Sea of Galilee. Well, when I go to Israel this fall, if they've got waves like that, I'm not waiting on the boat captain to say, we're not going. I'm not going. I want it to be calm. A couple of weeks ago when we were over in Mississippi on vacation, we went fishing and we caught a bunch of red snapper. But the only way that that joker ever got me to consent to go that far out was that ocean was smooth. There wasn't a foot wave, there wasn't 2 foot waves, it was smooth. And if it had not been that way, I'd have said, go to dock. You say, why? Because I've been sick twice on the ocean. And I'd have had to die both times to get better. And if he had said, I'm not going, I'd have said, oh, you going. If you want your money, you going. Or if you don't want me to take over the captain of this boat, there'll be a mutiny. But it was smooth and we had a great time. Well, when they leave, it's nice and smooth. Oh, but somehow something maybe extraordinary. You say, where did you get that from? Well, look with me at the passage here in verse 24. Not only do we perish, but then it says about Jesus, he arose and rebuked the wind. Now, that word rebuked is only used in the Synoptic Gospels, which is what we read tonight, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And once in, I think it's 2 Timothy, and once in Jude. Almost every time it's used, it's in Matthew, Mark, or Luke. And on many of those occasions, the rebuking is when he is rebuking a demon, commanding them to come out. And because Luke uses this word rebuke, he uses the same Greek word, there are a lot of scholars that believe that this story is an attempt by Satan himself to kill Jesus. There's a story in the Gospels when Jesus is up on a hillside next to a cliff. And people are trying to, the religious people are trying to basically get him to be thrown off. And what does it say? It says Jesus passed through them. In other words, there was something supernatural where he just kind of walked through them and they parted, even though they were so angry they wanted to throw him off the cliff. Here, there's people think that because Satan knows that he's the Messiah, this is a way for him to thwart the salvation plan of God. And so you've got storms revealing us. Now, some people would say, I can't believe these seasoned fishermen would be scared of a little storm. Well, I had an uncle that served, matter of fact, I had three uncles, but one of the uncles that told me this, I preached his funeral a couple of years ago. He told me, he said, I was in World War II. He said, I was a 17-year-old boy. And he said, we were in some battles. And he said, we got hit with a couple of torpedoes. But he said, the scaredest that I ever was when I was on a boat was in a typhoon. He said, back in my bedroom, he said, I've got a file. And he said, I sent off and got the minutes that had been logged on the brig for that particular day. And he said every 2 or 3 minutes there would be another log that would go in and it would tell the story. And he told me the story how that it was so bad that the captain asked the crew, is there anybody that you know on this boat that's got experience of this? He said, because my experience is limited in something this bad. And somebody told him about a 16-year-old boy that was on that boat that had gotten permission to go into the service. And that was not an uncommon thing. There were 16-year-olds that got permission to go, and then some of them lied about their age and went. But this particular boy was from the Great Lakes area. My uncle told me, said he was a Presbyterian boy. And he said they called this boy up to the bridge. And they said that the captain looked at him and he said, son, can you help us? I understand that you were raised on the Great Lakes and that there were some storms there. And he said, well, yes, sir. My dad and I, you know, we used to have those big freighters and all of that going across those lakes when those storms were there. And he said, can you help us? He said, well, I'll try. He said, would you give me 5 minutes? And he said, well, yeah, but hurry back. The boy went and prayed for 5 minutes, and then he came back, and they said for 18 hours he never left it. And he would tell them, he would say, you need to turn so many degrees starboard. You need to do this. Go back to the port side. And all through that, my uncle had all of these notes where that he could just understand really what he went through. But he told me, he said, that was the scariest that I ever was in my whole life. He said, finally, after 18 hours, it was over. These men are seasoned fishermen. And we say, I wouldn't have been scared. I'm rough, I'm tough, I'm brave. I'll tell you a humor story. Years ago, I had a youth activity. They called it a monster bash. On this particular October, sometime around Halloween, we had a meal, you know, things like buzzard eyes, which was like green peas, you know. We made up all kind of crazy names. Well, a part of the activity was I started telling spooky stories. I talked about a girl that I went to high school with and the bathtub would fill up at her house and one night she heard things in the attic and she shot her father's, you know, .38 into the ceiling and emptied the chamber and I was telling that. And I talked about this boy and this girl and the car had stalled underneath a tree over next to kind of a secluded road, and they kept hearing something on top of the tree or on top of the car, you know, and it wasn't the limb, it was somebody's arm, that type of thing. Well, about the time that I was telling all of this stuff, it was already set up with two guys. One of them was Glenn Hubbard and one was Danny Hubbard. And I had it set up where these two guys would come in, all the lights were out except for one little lantern right in front of me. And I said, now, when I get to this particular part, I want you guys to come in. And one of them had a chainsaw, and one of them had a 12-gauge shotgun. Now, before you freak out, we had taken the chain off of the chainsaw, and the shotgun wasn't ever pointed at anybody, and it plus had blanks in it like you'd train a bird dog, right? So I got about 40 kids in this room. And I got them kind of all, you know, in one particular end of it. And I'm telling these spooky stories. And I get to this one part, and all of a sudden, these kids hear this. And then it's boom, click, boom, as a bridge and a shotgun. And they start screaming and hollering, and I mean for like 20 or 30 seconds. And finally, I flipped the light on, And some of these kids are hyperventilating, and there's one senior boy in high school, and he's in the corner, and he is bawling his eyes out. It took me 15 minutes to get him calmed down. It's the only time I ever scared him like that. It's one of those times when I thought, I hate to go see Brother Don because I've probably already lost my job. But, you know, he's rough, he's tough, he's a senior. And then all of a sudden, he's over there going, crying like a little baby. These guys were rough fishermen. They had been out there. I mean, they had been in storms before. Oh, but they'd never been in kind of one of these storms that maybe was demonic. And so, storms will reveal us. But also, storms should drive us. Look at verse 24 again. They came to him. They came to him. They went to the right source. When you get to the point to where there's things that you can't deal with, Jesus can always handle it. He can always handle it. Now, the bigger the storm, when he handles it, the greater his glory. And we need to remember that when the storms that come against us, and they're coming, because as I mentioned in my first point, nobody's exempt from it. I mean, it's coming to everybody at some point in your life. But when they come, when God gets you through it, the more we can praise and glorify him. Now, why does he bring us into a storm? To build our faith. You see, this whole story is to build these men. Because it's not going to be too long before he's going to do something. He's going to take them two by two, and he's going to send them out. And they're going to be persecuted. But then there's going to be another time in just a couple of years. And he's going to be taken away from them. He's going to die. He's going to resurrect. And he's going to go back to the Father. And he's going to leave them. Now, he's not going to leave them comfortless. They're going to have the Holy Spirit. But when you do a study of the apostles, with the exception of John the Revelator and Judas Iscariot, every one of the apostles, according to tradition, died a martyr's death. Every one of them. They all have what's called apostolic symbols. And some of them show how these people died. One example is Thomas. It's been told through church history over the centuries that Thomas became a missionary in India. And the way that he died, he was martyred and his body was filleted, and his symbol, the apostolic symbol, are the three knives. All 10 of those original apostles, remember, with the exception of Judas, who committed suicide, and he was lost. And John the Revelator, all the other 10 died as martyrs. Perhaps this story gave them that extra faith that they needed as they thought about it. But they had already seen 5 or 6 miracles, but none of them had threatened their life until now. You know, when God brings you through trials and you get through that trial, it builds your faith. And the more you have your faith built, the more you know that you've got a Savior that can be trusted. And that's something that I tell people often when I go to the hospital. When I visited Miss Myers yesterday, I told her, I said, I can't explain to you why everything happens to Christians that happen, but I can tell you this, we've got a Jesus that can be trusted. Jesus could have been trusted in a storm, of these disciples, and he can be trusted in the storms that come into your life. Let's stand together. Well, I hope you'll be careful. The roads are wet. You be careful going home, and let's find somebody to bring with us to church on Sunday. Going to have some special music on Sunday. Choir will be doing some patriotic things, and we'll have a little special from some of the Munchkins that I think you'll enjoy. So let's have a great day on Sunday, and let's try to pack this auditorium out, okay? Father, I pray that